Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 624, titled Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on February 10th of the year 2008. And we're going to plunge right back into the article that I was reading in Side 1. Specifically, this story is by a former Air Force officer named David Antoon. It is printed on the blog Truth Dig. It's titled The Cancer from Within, and it was posted on November 7th of 2007. Now, in Side 1, we took a look at much of this story. David Antoon was an Air Force officer who was accompanying his son, who had won a scholarship to basically enroll, an appointment to enroll at the Air Force Academy. And unfortunately, David Antoon discovered that the Air Force had changed a good deal since he had been there, and specifically the forced evangelical proselytization, completely in violation of the U.S. Constitution and all military ethics guidance regulations, basically deterred the Antoon son from following through with his enrollment at the academy and his career decision to become an Air Force officer. And we were taking a look at the fundamental departure from the U.S. Constitution and military ethics guidelines that has taken place within apparently not just the Air Force Academy, but considerable other portions of the military, in which basically officers in the military are being proselytized to become evangelical Christians. And this has some very, very interesting implications for the future, and it is one of the things that I think is symptomatic of the just basically getting rid of selective service, something with which I didn't agree at the time, something that I've come to disagree with even more strongly in the years since. The framers of the Constitution did not envision an all-professional military. I don't think it's healthy for the military or for the civilian sector, and this is one of the many symptoms, I think. This affecting the military right now, it's going to affect the civilian sector down the road, but having that sort of a gap, having a civilian sector that knows nothing about military life and a military sector that doesn't know enough about civilian life and is not sympathetic to it, plus a military that is apparently being subject to overt and unbounded evangelical Christian proselytization, that bodes poorly, I think, for the future of the Constitution, and in particular the notion of the separation of church and state. We're going to come right back to, or in fact, we're going to plunge right back into David Antoon's article, The Cancer from Within, from the Truth Dig blog, November 7th, 2007. David Antoon, remember, a former career Air Force officer himself, writes, "In December of 2006, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation brought media focus to the Christian Embassy Evangelical Organization and its now famous video, which clearly showed the egregious ethics and constitutional violations of several flag officers and the breadth of the problem. Air Force Academy graduate Major General Jack Caton, who suggested in the film that his religious beliefs trump country and his oath to the Constitution, was cited last year for sending emails to military subordinates and contractors advocating they vote for a particular candidate for Congress, arguing that there are, quote, not enough Christians in Congress, unquote. West Point graduate and Army Brigadier General Robert Caslin, who was filmed stating, quote, we are the aroma of Jesus Christ here in the Pentagon, unquote, is now Commandant of Cadets at West Point. West Point graduate Army Brigadier General Vincent Brooks, another Christian embassy star, was, quote, the voice, unquote, and the face, unquote, of the press conferences at Qatar. His office is famous for the creation of the Rambo Jessica Lynch fabrications and the manipulation of the killing of Pat Tillman into a recruiting and media event. West Point graduate and evangelical Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Kozerlik, involved in the investigation of Tillman's death, stated publicly that Pat Tillman's family was not at peace with his death because they are atheists who believe their son is now worm dirt, unquote. One more time, people might want to assimilate this one. West Point graduate and evangelical Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Kozlerich, K-A-U-Z-L-A-R-I-C-H, involved in the investigation of Pat Tillman's death, stated publicly that Tillman's family was not at peace with his death because they are atheists who believe their son is now worm dirt, unquote. Air Force Academy graduate Major General Peter Sutton, assigned as the senior U.S. military officer in Turkey at the time the Military Religious Freedom Foundation brought the Christian embassy into media focus, was questioned by Turkish officials about his membership in a radical evangelical cult. Many are aware of the mercenary army, Blackwater USA, led by Eric Prince, former Ambassador Kofor Black, and Joseph Schmitz, the same Joseph Schmitz mentioned above. It is here where the ties become complex and suggestive of an even grander crusade, unquote. As noted by Jeremy Scahill in his book Blackwater, Prince, who attended the U.S. Naval Academy, comes from a wealthy theocon family, is a neo-crusader, unquote, and a Christian supremacist. He has been given billions of dollars in federal contracts to create a private army. COO Schmitz, Chief Operating Officer Schmitz, another Naval Academy graduate, is a member of the Order of Malta. That's, by the way, the Knights of Malta, a Christian supremacist organization dating back to the Crusades, and happens to be married to the sister of Jeb Bush's wife, Columba. And Kofor Black, former coordinator for counterterrorism at the U.S. State Department and former director of CIA's Counterterrorism Center, was quoted by the BBC as saying, quote, "Capture bin Laden, kill him, and bring his head back in a box on dry ice," unquote, brings his own skill set to the Blackwater team as vice chairman. By the way, I think there's a piece of slight disinformation here. I'm going to correct that, I believe, in a second. The Christian supremacist fascism first reported at the Air Force Academy is endemic throughout the military. From the top down, there has been a complete repudiation of constitutional values and time-honored codes of ethics and honor codes in favor of religious ideology. And we now have a revolving door between Blackwater USA, which is Bush's Praetorian Guard, and the U.S. military at every level. The citizen-soldier military dictated by our founding fathers has been replaced with professional and mercenary right-wing Christian crusaders in charge of the world's most powerful military. The risks to our democratic form of government cannot be overstated. This evangelical Christian supremacist fascism within our military and government is a cancer. Officers, especially commanders who violate the original code of ethics, must be rooted out of the military. The undermining of the Constitution, especially by senior military officers, must end. As I look back at my 30 years as an active duty officer, two combat tours in Vietnam, decorations including air medals and the Distinguished Flying Cross, I realize that not once was my service in support or defense of the Constitution. For the very first time, I am upholding my oath of office. And that, again, an article by David Antoon himself, a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy and a career Air Force officer, about unconstitutional, what he calls Christian, evangelical Christian supremacist fascism. By the way, I think that the member of the Schmitz family who's married to Jeb Bush's sister, Columba Bush, is actually the brother of Joseph Schmitz. I'd have to double-check that, but I think that's actually John P. Schmitz. Now, John P. Schmitz is interesting in and of himself. He is a member of the Mayer Brown Maw International Law Firm, which is basically representing a number of defendants in 911-related lawsuits. It also, basically, Mayer Brown and Maw had a person on the, quote, 911 investigating commission, thereby giving them water cooler access to everything the commission was looking into. And it's also worth noting, too, that John P. Schmitz was the deputy counsel for George Bush, the elder, both when he was vice president and when he was president of the United States. And John P. Schmitz, brother, I think, certainly brother of Joseph Schmitz, son of John G. Schmitz, John P. Schmitz also had a Bosch Foundation fellowship, and not the Bosch Foundation, like the Alpha Fellowship and also the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Basically, these are all related fellowship programs. The Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, basically, or the Carl Duisberg Society, was responsible for trafficking around Mohammed Atta, certainly in the U.S. and possibly in Germany and before that. And we've looked at these foundations as literally sort of the underground Reich Academy. Those are the academies, the finishing schools that process people for the Bormann Network. Certainly the evidence points in that direction. So again, I think there's a slight error there. I think that the member of the Schmitz family married to Columba Bush's sister is actually John P. Schmitz, not Joseph Schmitz. But it is one big happy family. And Joseph Schmitz, former Inspector General of the Pentagon, who took no action against any of the activities cited there, is definitely Chief Operating Officer of Blackwater International. He also is a member of the Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. That was discussed at considerable length in, for the record, 510, in which I reprised a program from the fall of 1982. Now, we're going to turn to Blackwater, which is exemplary of some of the private security outfits that are filling the gap in what used to be a public, or at least publicly accountable, U.S. military establishment. Among the things that has gone awry with the military developments of the last 30 or 40 years are these private security outfits. And again, Joseph Schmitz, former Inspector General of the Pentagon, who took no action against any of the activities cited there. Joseph Schmitz is a member of the Knights of Malta. Where do you suppose the apparent new operational base of Blackwater International is? According to the Malta Independent, it is, ta-da, Malta itself, the island of Malta. This article comes from the Malta Independent of February 9th of 2008, and this particular article is titled, Malta is Opera... Actually, this article came out some time ago. This is not February 9th of 2008. This came out some time ago. But the date at the top of this is February 9th of 2008. I will have the article itself and the correct date. This came out last year, but we will have the correct date eventually for you. This particular story is by Noel Grima, and it is headlined by the Malta Independent. Again, that's the right newspaper, wrong date. The Malta Independent headlined this, Malta is Blackwater operational base, this from a member of the Maltese Parliament. A European Parliament working document drawn up by Giovanni Claudio Fava has claimed, quote, Malta is the operational base of Blackwater, the organizer of private military militia, which are increasingly taking on more and more roles which used to be undertaken by U.S. forces in Iraq and elsewhere, unquote. American left-wing and anti-war media are in full cry about the underhand and subtle changes which have made Blackwater the new symbol of American claimed supremacy carried out by forces other than the regular military. California Democratic Senator Henry Waxman has been holding a number of hearings on the spread of Blackwater, but even they, the more anti-war media claims, have held back from seeing the whole picture. Thus, the four-hour interrogation of Blackwater director Eric Prince got lost in details, even discovering, for instance, a December 2006 arrangement, unquote, negotiated by the State Department as compensation for an Iraqi policeman killed by a Blackwater employee. But it was only Republican Daryl Issa from California who documented the intimate links between Prince and the Bush administration. On the eve of the hearings, Oliver North, a former colonel who has been condemned for exchanging arms with for cocaine in the fight against communism in Nicaragua, accused Senator Waxman of a huge witch hunt, unquote. Dennis Kucinich, a Democrat from Ohio, argued that since the military functions had been privatized, it was in Blackwater's interest to prolong the war rather than to end it. An article on Salon.com carried the charges by Jeremy Scahill that the Christian fundamentalists behind Blackwater were the hardcore in favor of the war, George Bush and Dick Cheney and their patron, former Secretary of State George Shultz. Eric Prince's parents, Edgar Prince and his wife Elsa Prince Brookhusen, through their foundation, financed the Council for National Policy, an ultra-secret society which met in Salt Lake City on the 28th of September to hear Dick Cheney argue the case for an attack on Iran. Prince Sr. is one of the pillars of the Christian Coalition of Gary Bauer and of the Family Research Council of James Dobson. Eric Prince, through his own foundation, the Freiheit Foundation, finances Christendom College, the Institute for World Politics, Crisis Magazine, and the Prison Fellowship of Chuck Colson. Prince also finances the Légionnaire du Christ and Christian Freedom International. When still 27 years old, Eric Prince founded Blackwater USA. He and those who soon joined him have profited from the more than $1,000 million they have taken as contracts from 2000 to 2006. In 2004, Kofor Black passed from the CIA to the State Department and thence became Blackwater's vice president. While still in the CIA, Black was in charge of the special extraditions organizing the secret transfer of prisons from Iraq to Afghanistan to countries less rigid against the practice of torture such as Poland, Romania, Egypt, and so on. These planes, which traveled between Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, and Afghanistan, often made stopovers in many European countries such as the UK, Italy, France, Germany, and Malta, and many times without the countries themselves being informed what was going on. Now, the Swiss procurator Dick Marty has sent documents regarding the CIA's flying prisons to the European Parliament and names two Blackwater subsidiaries, Presidential Airwaves and Aviation Worldwide Services. The Giovanni Claudio Fava document on behalf of the European Parliament says the two companies used Casa C-212 planes, usually used to transport paratroops and big cargoes, and also able to land on improvised landing spots. So according to the Malta Independent, Malta is becoming a major operational base for Blackwater, some of whose activities you heard synopsized in that particular article. It did not, unfortunately, go into a lot of detail about just what exactly Blackwater is doing in Malta, but certainly for any company that wanted a secure base for activities in the Eastern Mediterranean, Malta would be a logical place to hook up, on which to establish itself. And also, of course, with Joseph Schmitz, the chief operating officer of Blackwater, being a Knight of Malta, Malta would once again be a logical place to find Blackwater, at which one would find Blackwater based. More about Blackwater and its connections. In a recent miscellaneous articles and updates, we took a look at Blackwater's profound links to the Central Intelligence Agency and concern on the part of agency professionals that basically much of the agency was being privatized to Blackwater. More in this regard, this is from the Los Angeles Times of November 15th of 2007, article by Paul Richter, its headline, State Department Official's Brother Has Blackwater Ties. It reads in part, the State Department's internal watchdog, accused of politicizing his office, told a congressional panel Wednesday that he will step aside from any future probe of Blackwater USA because his brother serves on the advisory board of the controversial security contractor. The testimony by Howard J. Krongard, the department's inspector general, came as a surprise at a congressional hearing about his performance. At first, Krongard denied that his brother, former CIA official Alvin B. Buzzy Krongard, had any interest in Blackwater, the State Department's primary private security contractor in Iraq, being investigated for the deaths of civilians. However, members of the House panel suggested he was in error. During a hearing break, Krongard called his brother and said he learned that, in fact, Alvin Krongard agreed earlier this year to be a member of Blackwater's advisory board, a position that pays travel expenses for meetings and offers $3,500 for each gathering attended. I had not been aware of that, unquote, Krongard said after the break. I want to state right now on the record that I recuse myself from any matters having to do with Blackwater, unquote. Krongard, a former corporate lawyer, had been under fire from Representative Henry A. Waxman, Democrat of Beverly Hills, House Oversight and Government Reform Committee chairman, for impeding State Department investigations, including a Blackwater probe. So again, Howard Krongard, the brother of Alvin B. Krongard, former CIA official, now a key official with Blackwater, but Howard Krongard, a key State Department official as well. So Given that Blackwater is a private interest, given that many of its evangelical orientations are in fundamental contradiction with the dictates of the U.S. Constitution, yet disturbingly consistent with some unconstitutional practices that are apparently becoming more or less routine in some segments of the military, it is disturbing to see the development of these connections, these parapolitical connections between Blackwater, a private interest, and various government agencies that are supposed to be executing the public interest. Sign of the times. One of the other signs of the times is something of a renewed Cold War. There is increased hostility between Russia and the West, in particular the United States. One of the contributing factors to this is the fact that there are elements in our own State Department that have never accepted the end of the Cold War and that continue to try to push Russia around. And in For the Record, program number 529, called Nazi Roots and Fascist Flowers, we took note of some of the political forces underlying the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine, specifically Mr. Yushchenko's wife, the former Ekaterina Chumachenko. It was the head of the presidential liaison office under Ronald Reagan and apparently later George Bush. She also was the chief point person for the OUNB. That was a Ukrainian fascist and nationalist organization that worked for the Third Reich, recruited people for Waffen-SS divisions, took part in the Holocaust and its execution in the Ukraine, and later became a key element first of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations and also the Galen spy outfit. Elements of the OUNB crop up, among other places, in the investigation into the assassination of President Kennedy. Indeed, it was the assassination of Stefan Bandera, the head of the OUNB, ostensibly by the KGB, but in all probability by other elements within the Galen milieu. That was basically used to tar Lee Harvey Oswald with the commie assassin brush and was used to help cover up the assassination of President Kennedy. Again, note that there are strong links between the regime of Mr. Yushchenko and the OUNB milieu, the OUNB milieu dating back to, or part of and dating back to, not only the Reinhard Galen spy outfit, but elements of the Underground Reich, and elements of the Underground Reich that became part of the Republican Party, courtesy of the Crusade for Freedom. The fascist elements in the Ukraine and Russia's response to them continue to be a political football. The following comes from the Eurasia Daily Monitor. It's by someone named Taras Kuzio, Monday, December 17th of 2007. This article is titled, Russia and the Ukraine Trade Harsh Words Over Historical Memory. On December 14th, Russia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, or MFA, issued a strongly worded statement complaining of open nationalist, anti-Russian, and Russophobic feelings and developments in the Ukraine, unquote. Attempts are being made, it claimed, to, quote, use difficult periods in our joint history to receive brief political rewards based on doubtful ideological pretensions, unquote. The number of historical issues dividing Ukraine and Russia continues to grow and aggravate the already strained relations between a reformist Ukraine and a resurgent autocratic Russia. In late November, both countries exchanged diplomatic notes after the Eurasian Youth Movement, or EYM, a Russian nationalist group proscribed in the Ukraine, destroyed an exhibition at the Ukrainian embassy in Moscow, marking the 1932-33 famine. The Ukrainian side described the vandalism as provocative and anti-Ukrainian. 1 month earlier, the EYM had destroyed Ukrainian national symbols on Hovorla Mountain in the western Ukraine and launched cyber attacks that shut down the presidential website. Since December 9th, the servers supporting the Orange Youth NGO, the Kharkov Human Rights Group Protection, and the Ukrainian Helsinki Human Rights Union have all faced sustained attacks. And it goes on. Valentin Novichenko, chairman of the Security Service of the Ukraine, called upon his Russian counterparts to not permit on each other's territories extremist and, God forbid, terrorist actions which are undertaken by such structures. Reportedly, officials foiled a terrorist attack that had been planned to coincide with a Russian march in Crimea's capital, Simferopol. The banned group Preorv, with underground branches in the Crimea and ties to extreme left and pan-Slavic groups, was suspected of being behind the planned provocation, which would have been blamed on Ukrainian nationalists. And skipping down, Ukraine and Russia have embraced different interpretations of key historical events and personalities since the late Soviet era. The divergence continued under Presidents Leonid Kravchuk and Leonid Kuchma, with the return to Ukrainian national historiography, which had been banned in the 1930s, but kept alive in the Ukrainian diaspora. The process has become much more heated with the rise of Ukraine's President Viktor Yushchenko and Russia's Vladimir Putin. Yushchenko has actively sought to investigate the blank pages, unquote, of Ukrainian history, while Putin has returned to a neo-Soviet synthesis of Russian imperial and Soviet ideology in historiography and national symbols. Some of the most heated debates have occurred around two primary issues: Ukrainian leaders and independence movements and crimes committed by the Soviet regime in the Ukraine. New Ukrainian symbols, holidays, and commemorations have prompted protests from Moscow. For example, the Tsarist and Soviet regimes regarded 18th-century Cossack Hetman Ivan Mazepa to be a traitor, and the Russian Orthodox Church excommunicated him. But he is a hero in the Ukraine. A December 13th decree contained plans for commemorating the 90th anniversary of Ukraine's declaration of independence from the Tsarist Empire next year. A monument to Simon Petliura, who led the drive for Ukrainian independence after the Russian Revolution, was vandalized in Poltava, his home region. World War II also remains a divisive issue. A new monument to the organization of Ukrainian nationalist leader Stefan Bandera, assassinated by the KGB in Munich in 1959, was vandalized after it was unveiled in Lvov. An October 12th presidential decree outlined instructions to local authorities on how to commemorate the 65th anniversary of the formation of the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, or UPA, a nationalist guerrilla force that fought a decade-long war against Nazi and Soviet forces. Another presidential decree awarded the Hero of Ukraine designation to UPA Commander Roman Shukovich on the centennial of his birth. By the way, the UPA did not fight against Nazi forces. They fought for the Nazis, and so that's a bit of a distortion there. They were a key element of Nazi policy in the Ukraine, although at one point they were reined in. More about this in the description to the program, available on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. However, this is all we have time for. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 624, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on February 10th of the year 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.